freshening southeasterly wind. Temperatures here 13 degrees. In Scotland, any early morning showers tending to ease away from Shetland. Then there'll be a lot of dry weather, some decent sunny spells across central and eastern parts, with temperatures in Scotland around about 12 or 13 degrees. That's how the weather's shaping up. It's now back to Neil.
All right, many thanks, Chris Fox. Time now on Radio 4 for our book of the week. Jennifer Saunders first started to make us laugh with her comedy partner Dawn French in the 1980s and has continued to do so ever since. Later in the 1990s, she created and starred in Absolutely Fabulous, which went on to become a runaway hit. Jennifer Saunders recalls how it all came about in the next installment from her memoir, Bonkers, My Life in Laughs.
In 1991, Dawn and I had planned to do a fourth series of French and Saunders at the BBC. Studios had been booked for the end of the year, with director Bob Spears, his Bobness, in place. Just as we were about to get down to writing it, Dawn and Lenny got the call they'd so desperately been waiting for. There was a baby ready for adoption. This joyful news, of course, meant that Dawn would have to put work on hold. I imagined that the studios would be cancelled and we would wait for a suitable time to get the whole thing up and running again, whenever Dawn felt ready. Then our agent Maureen rang. Now, love, I've been putting my heads together and thinking vis-à-vis the studios and wondering if, rather than cancel them, there might be anything that you could possibly do. Do? Well, love, write. Write? What, on my own? Yes, love. I was thrown into confusion. I had a think. I'd never considered writing on my own. I had a really big think. In desperation, the idea for Absolutely Fabulous gradually dawned. I thought about the character I had enjoyed the most on French and Saunders, the character for which I had done the most writing. She was the mad modern mother, the ex-hippie with the sad straight daughter. I could speak her easily, which would make the writing simpler, indeed possible. It was a starting point, at least. I mean, the sketch was about 10 minutes long, so I thought, it's only got to be another 18 minutes, and it's a show. I wrote some stuff down on some bits of paper and showed them to John Plowman, and was then sent around the BBC to various script editors in offices, who all had suggestions like, could they be more sympathetic? Do they need to drink? Shouldn't the daughter have a friend? Well, no, I decided the daughter shouldn't have a friend, as that was the whole point. But I did want Adina to have a friend, and that friend would be Patsy. I just like writing two people. I'm used to a double act. Adina and Patsy are the ultimate double act. They each allow the other one to exist. They encourage each other's behaviour, and it normalises it for them. On their own, they're other sad characters. Together, they are a force. Writing Adina was like writing a long, late-night drunken rant. Things you think, but could never say. She's got no brakes, only an accelerator pedal, and keeps going until she crashes. Adina's daughter, Safi, is the bedrock of the show. She is the audience. She is the one who catches Patsy and Adina out and makes them feel ridiculous occasionally. We cast Julia Sawala as Safi, Jane Horrocks as Bubble, and June Whitfield as Adina's mother. They were all brilliant. Now all that was left was Patsy. In the original script, Patsy was very different from what she eventually became. I'd written her as a hard-nosed, hard-drinking journo, and we offered the part to an actress who would have been brilliant as a hard-nosed journalist, but she couldn't do it, so we were stumped. Until someone, and I think it was Aid, came up with the genius idea of Joanna Lumley. So a small room was organised and Joanna came in to read a scene. This was really for her benefit, so she could see what she might be getting into and have the opportunity to choose not to. We read a scene that was set in a car and so sat on two wooden chairs next to each other. It was quite awkward. I couldn't really explain the character to her and had entirely forgotten my character. I became mute. Joanna has a lovely voice and a natural elegance. I had to say something. All I could think of suggesting was perhaps, I don't know, but maybe she could have not such a nice voice, maybe. I don't know. For some inexplicable reason, Joanna, and I thank God for this, accepted the part. I rewrote Patsy for her almost immediately. Everything fitted into place. Joanna would talk about the 60s and her modelling days, and it became clear that Patsy had to be in fashion. I had no idea what a fashion director on a magazine did, but it seemed ridiculous enough that it was a possibility. A job that isn't really a job. It just involved pointing at some clothes and then going out to play. On our first day of filming, we were doing all the little outside bits for the pilot, which you do before you go into the studio. Joanna and I were in a big jag, filming a conversation as Patsy and Adina go to Harvey Nicks, obviously. It was a little awkward, because we were both just getting to know our characters. You know, it's quite embarrassing acting in front of people sometimes. I mean, am I being funny, or does she just think I'm a fool? Luckily, we had plenty of time to get through this, because the supporting artist who had been hired to play the chauffeur had no experience at all of driving cars. At the beginning of every take, we would either go backwards or not move at all. If we did get going, halfway through the joke, he'd jam on the brakes and we'd fly off our seats. It broke the ice, and after a few post-filming drinks, we never looked back. June 2002. I'm sitting in a beautiful hall in the Senate Building in New York, dressed in a white Ralph Lauren trouser suit, a Philip Tracy hat with a stars and stripes scarf tied round the brim, and badges announcing, "I love New York," on my lapels. Joanna is next to me, and she's looking as much like Patsy as she can. Hair up, plenty of red lipstick, proper high heels. We are here to be honoured with the freedom of the city. It is Gay Pride Week, and we are here to receive an LGBT award. No, dear listener, not a lettuce, gherkin, bacon and tomato sandwich award. Have you no sense or sensibility? I mean a lesbian, gay, bisexual and transgender award, obviously. Now, I never anticipated Patsy and Adina becoming gay icons. I entirely missed the idea that these were divas and that they apparently have the perfect mix of bravado and vulnerability. But then I never dreamed the show would take off in the first place. I have to point out here and now that I was not alone in the writing of Ab Fab. Ruby Wax played a huge part. Ruby is never precious and I owe her much, not least for some brilliant Patsy lines. "One snap of my fingers and I can raise hemlines so high that the world is your gynaecologist. These women shop for lunch. Labels are their only sustenance. Their skeleton legs and Manolos have worn trenches down the pavement of Sloane Street. There are just enough muscles left in their sinewy arms to lift a credit card." Now, it has to be said that when it came to the perks of Ab Fabin, the slot machine kept paying out. During those years, Joanna and I came to an agreement. If we were asked to do anything, anything at all, which involved a free flight and a guaranteed laugh, we would automatically say yes. We'd meet at the airport, and from that moment on, fun would commence. An all-expenses-paid trip to the US was the best of perks. I mean, a business class flight and 5 days in New York or LA, only an idiot would turn these down. "And not paid by the licence payers, I hope," I hear you cry. No, dear licence payer. No, paid for by Americans. So back to the ceremony in New York. Now, Joanna had rung me before we left and said, "Darling, darling, by the sound of things, this is going to be quite a flamboyant affair." "Yes," I said, "I agree. So let's not let them down this time." The time to which she was referring was a party we'd attended in New York a while earlier to launch a new season of Ab Fab. We had arrived at the party looking like our normal selves, only to be greeted by huge drag queen versions of our characters. The party was spectacular. It had a champagne fountain. It was camp and kitsch. But when we made our presence known, we were reluctantly allowed into the roped-off area where there were gasps of disappointment. "Oh, my God, it's them!" We were too ordinary to live up to expectations. We had normal hair and normal clothes. We were the real mice that arrive in Disneyland to be greeted by Mickey and Minnie. We weren't like Minnie. We were small and brown and barely recognisable. So, for the Senate trip, we decided to go for it, to dress for it, to not let anyone down. It was gay pride and we wanted them to feel appreciated. We would dress as close to the characters as we could. We felt this would do the trick. We could act up and be camp. On the plane over, while sipping the odd beverage, I casually mentioned to Joanna that perhaps a speech of thanks might be in order. Darling, we shouldn't linger. We will be Patsy and Eddie. I will do a few cheers, thanks a lot. And you will do, thank you, sweetie darlings. Then there will be some nice photos. And that will be it. No speech. The next morning, Joanna and I arrived at the Senate in all our finery, only to be greeted by men in dark suits, politicians, senators, dark-suited and very serious. These were not frivolous awards at all. These were serious and political. My heart began to sink. The event kicked off with stories of brave gay people facing adversity. We clapped. Then a moving song by the sister of a gay man who had been murdered because of his sexuality. We cried. Then the life story of a transgender man, now woman, who had fought prejudice and actually become a senator. Crikey. Joanna leant over. Darling.
What?
I think you may need a speech.
I haven't got a speech. You said I didn't need to make a speech.
Think of something. I was looking out at a sea of sweet but serious faces, and before I knew it, our time had come. The House leader came to the microphone and began his proclamation honouring me. Be it resolved that on this day, June the 27th, 2002, at New York City Hall, on the occasion of the LGBT Pride Awards ceremony, we proclaim Jennifer Saunders an honorary New Yorker for today and forever. Joanna had her own declaration, and that wasn't all. He introduced Whoopi Goldberg, who was making a speech. Yes, a speech about us. I was now in full panic mode. I stumbled to the podium and accepted the award with a mixture of sweetie darlings, bolly, 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 sweetie, sweetie, darlings, darlings, darlings. And trying to be serious, thank you so much for this award. We will feel very proud and treasure this. A tragic mixture. Joanna had more success with a bit of Patsy.
Yeah, cheers, thanks a lot. Cheers, cheers. Yep. Cheers, yep, cheers, cheers. Polly, darling, sweetie, sweetie. You can never have enough accessories, gloves, hats and shoes.
We walked away, feeling slightly ashamed, but also a little bit pleased with our proclamations. We were, after all, honorary New Yorkers. We had the pieces of paper and were proud. We left the Senate building and were whisked by car to much more familiar territory. An ab-fab look-alike competition in a gay club. Phew, thank God. The music was loud, the men were very gay, and most of them in costume. We could relax. Drinks were necked. We judged the look-alike competition, which was fierce. The rest of the trip was a whirlwind, driving around the city in a limo with Debbie Harry, looking for a place to have fun, as you do. A night in Bungalow 8 with Graham Norton, as you do. A party thrown for us by Glenda Bailey, the editor of Harper's Bazaar, as you do. Joanna and I would always end up back at our hotel, spinning with drink and jet lag, but nevertheless staying up late, just laughing. At the Four Seasons suite, we'd lie staring out at the skyline, amazed by our good fortune. We'd watch the lights change colour on the Chrysler Building and play with the electric curtains. New York was special.
Jennifer Saunders continues reading from her memoir, Bonkers, My Life in Laughs, at the same time tomorrow. The abridger was Richard Hamilton, and the producer was Elizabeth Allard. Now here sailing by to take us to the shipping forecast. Time now on BBC Radio 4 for the shipping forecast issued by the Met Office on behalf of the Maritime and Coast Guard Agency at 0015 on Thursday, the 24th of October. There are warnings of gales in Viking, North Etcetera, South Etcetera, Forties, Cromarty, Forth, Fisher, German Bight, Hebrides, Fair Isle and Faroes. The general synopsis at 1800. Low, Faroes 977, will move into the Norwegian Sea. New low, 990, expected Seoul by 1800 today. The area forecasts for the next 24 hours. Viking, North Etcetera, South Etcetera, Forties. West, 6 to gale 8, occasionally severe gale 9 at first, in Viking. Backing southwest, 4 or 5. Showers, good. Cromarty, 4th. West, 6 to gale 8, backing south or southeast, 3 or 4.